The last presidential debate before the US election on November 7th delivered some surprises, but did it change any of our predictions on the eventual outcome? A question for our lead US analyst, Michael Moran.
No, in fact, I think it cements in our forecast. Donald Trump was losing by a significant margin, particularly in the Electoral College, which is the state-by-state measurement of who will win an election, and that's what matters in the United States. He needed really to reverse the trend of these polls, and also the impression that centrist voters have that he's simply not the right man for the job, that somehow is doesn't have the temperament and the self-control to do it. It did not really come off that well for him in the debate. There were a lot of punches thrown each way, but by and large, we see the momentum still moving toward Clinton. She's now competitive in states where no Democrat has been competitive for generation, places like Georgia in the Deep South, Arizona, and even some polls have her very neck and neck in places like Texas and South Carolina. So this is not good news for Donald Trump. And it reflects something we've seen for a long time in this election, is that the Republican Party really has not updated their pitch to American voters to match the changing demographics and social views of the electorate.
The period between the election of the new president when they actually take office is commonly called the lame duck period. What's President Obama going to get done in his last couple of months in office?
Well, there's some interesting opportunities here in the lame duck period, where many of the politicians in Congress, the old Congress, will no longer be in the new one when it's sworn in January. It's an opportunity for them to cross party lines without facing voters again, and to get things done that were basically stalled by politics during the election period. So I believe that TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement, will be done during this period. Its prospects have diminished over the year, but Obama appears as if he's going to be the final Democrat and possibly the final U.S. president for some time who can outwardly argue for free trade. There's been a populist upsurge in the country in both parties that is making that politically impossible. The outgoing Republican-led Congress also wants to get that deal done for all sorts of reasons of their own, mostly their economic constituency. And so I do believe that there's a really moment of clarity that this is not going to get done ever if it doesn't get done in the lame duck period. Hillary Clinton, who has had to change her view, she was previously for it and during the election was forced really to oppose it, has said that she will continue to oppose it. But I think in her heart of hearts, she remains a free trader and would like to see it off of her desk and in fact in place when she comes to office on January 2017. The other things that could happen in the lame duck period, there could be some progress on corporate tax reform. There could be some progress on issues regarding the reform of immigration policy. I think Republicans in both cases have realized that these issues played against them fairly significantly in the general election. But I also think there are going to be some speculation about whether Obama will pardon Edward Snowden. I don't honestly think he will, but I think there will be plenty of pressure from the progressive left for him to do so. There's been a lot of speculation about Mr. Snowden's comments over the campaign period that he's trying to play nice with the U.S. right now in hope that this might happen. I think that's a forlorn hope.
So assuming then that our predictions are correct and the polls ring true, Hillary Clinton becomes president. What's the first term going to bring in terms of foreign policy, do you think?
Well, foreign policy is a place where a U.S. president has a good deal of unilateral ability to get things done. It's not a requirement to have votes in Congress constantly over issues of foreign policy. So I think it will be quite active for her in terms of adjusting Obama administration policy in various areas. For instance, in Syria, she has long been an advocate for a fly zone over Syria, with something that she disagreed with her boss, President, when she was Secretary of State. That, I think, will be imposed after a series of conversations with other players like Turkey, Iraqi government, and, of course, Russia, in hopes that they can clear a corridor and create safe havens for refugees inside Syria. There will also be a stepped-up effort to support the Iraqi government as it continues to push on Mosul, and I believe there will be a real push into Syria itself in an effort to try to wipe out the caliphate early in her term that has hung over her to some extent during the election campaign. And it has been a problem for the Obama administration generally, because while you could argue that the Iraq war itself was the birth mother of ISIS in the long run, the way the U.S. pulled out and the vacuum that was left behind certainly helped midwife it. So they would like very much, both Obama and Hillary Clinton, to put an end to that talk. In Asia, I believe that Hillary Clinton will be a bit more strident with regard to China. And one of the big changes in policy that I think is coming in the next administration, regardless of who wins, is on trade policy. Donald Trump, who, again, we don't believe will be the president, would do all sorts of unilateral things, some punitive tariffs, very high tariffs, for instance. He said 45% on incoming Chinese imports, 35% on incoming Mexican imports, this with a country that he has a free trade agreement with the United States, the North American Free Trade Agreement. I think that's, you know, off the table at this point. But Hillary Clinton faces her own pressures within her party to be protectionist. I think she's made it very clear that she's going to go after China in the WTO for what she has characterized as dumping of steel and aluminum products in the U.S. market. I think there'll be a lot of pressure to use tariffs and other non-tariff barriers much more forcefully in her administration. And there are plenty of domestic incentives to do so. It's very clear that the Democratic Party is not a party of free trade, and has for a long time not been. It's really its elite cadres that have been holding up the free trade line. That's over. I think the Democratic president is going to see very little political advantage to fighting that trend, and you're going to see tariffs put on low-wage manufacturing companies. Having said that, large existing free trade agreements like the North American Free Trade Agreement are things that will not be changed under Hillary Clinton. She, in her heart of heart, as I said, I think remains a free trader, even if she has to be a closet free trader at this point.
Relations between the U.S. and Russia are at a very low ebb. How do you see Hillary Clinton trying to manage that relationship?
Well, I think it's going to be difficult to reel back the rhetoric of this campaign. For as much as Donald Trump has bashed Mexico and China, the bête noire of the Clinton campaign has been Vladimir Putin. And it has gotten quite personal. Even in the last debate, Hillary Clinton made several references to Vladimir Putin that were less than diplomatic for a former Secretary of State and for someone who's going to have to deal one way or another with Russia and its president once she gets into office. So I don't think there's going to be any kind of a reset, which was the of course, the famous phrase that was being used when Hillary Clinton and Obama came to power in 2008. I think the trajectory of U.S.-Russian relations right now is where it's going to be for a while, which is very, very poor. It's in some areas, there is the threat or risk, if, for instance, over the air space of Syria, of actual clashes. I think the relationship will contain, the importance of the bilateral relationship will contain any such incident to rhetorical and kind of tactical moves by both countries. I don't think there's any prospect of actual war, but we do see this as a continuing problem. We don't see Hillary Clinton moving to, for instance, take sanctions or lighten sanctions on Russia. If anything, the incentive both internationally and domestically is going to be for her to pursue further sanctions against Russia. So I think that is going to be a real friction in U.S. policy.
Okay, so moving to the domestic front, domestic policy is an area where Hillary Clinton has many things that are close to her heart and her political identity. Is she going to be able to make much headway?
This is really important to understand, because for all the concentration on her tenure as Secretary of State, that was really an exception to her resume. Obama, in many ways, was thought to have given her that job, in fact, to take her out of the running in 2012. because she had been, of course, his rival in 2008. Now, having said that, she has really deeply felt feelings about certain aspects of domestic policy. These include gender equality in pay in the U.S. labor market. These include child welfare and health insurance. I think those issues, along with some economic policy issues that have to do with trying to continue the progress that has been made in reversing income inequality, those will be the issues she really wants to get things done on. Now, having said that, those are precisely the issues she's going to need Congress to get things done on, and that's going to be very difficult. The Republicans are going to come out of this election as deeply divided as they went into it. The Trump faction really wasn't even in play for the last several elections. This was a new faction kind of grafted onto the party that was already at war with itself between the kind of old school establishment faction, which was the Bushes, essentially, and the new kind of more vociferous religious right, Christian right, which was represented by Senator Ted Cruz. So these conflicts will persist. I think Clinton will have the Senate by a very small margin. The Democrats will have the Senate in the next period, but they will not be able to do much because the Republicans will maintain the ability to block through parliamentary blocking tactics her major initiative. So she's going to have a very tough time making policy stick and making law.
So we now find ourselves in the closing stages of an American election that's really been unlike any other. What has the arrival of Donald Trump on the national political scene done to American politics?
Well, there were a number of surprising and some would say disturbing firsts in this election. Decorum would probably be at the top of that list. Donald Trump regularly dropped the F-bomb in public at rallies. There were encouragements from the Trump campaign at times, always rhetorically, that looked very much like it was creeping up toward violence. In fact, his assertion repeated again in the third debate that he will withhold judgment on whether he'll regard this as a legitimate election is a pretty severe and unusual and unprecedented remark for a candidate that still has several weeks to go in a campaign. It suggests the possibility that he'll call his supporters into the street. So, and it suggests a question about the legitimacy of the U.S. electoral system, which, for all its crazy electoral college and constitutional rules, has been in place for over 200 years and functioning, and by and large, very rarely has there been any question of an election being actually stolen. Now, the Republican Party in recent years has sometimes questioned the legitimacy of the results of such elections, most famously in 2000, where actually Al Gore, the Democrat, won the popular vote, but a Supreme Court decision on a close vote in Florida gave it to George W. Bush. But also, if you go back to 92, Bill Clinton won a three-way race, which included a gentleman named Ross Perot, and did not win more than 50% of the vote. And many Republicans then took that to mean he had no mandate to govern, because the U.S. electoral system almost always produces a result where the winning candidate wins more than 50%. So Clinton was really hobbled with this claim throughout his term, first term, that he wasn't a legitimate president. And it may have explained some of the vitriol and some of the kind of extremes that Republicans in that era went to try to take him down, ultimately impeaching him in his second term. So I think that there's a history here that's been built on and exacerbated by Donald Trump of challenging the legitimacy. Now, having said that, it's important to note here that Bernie Sanders of the Democratic Progressive Left made similar arguments, or at least his candidate, or at least his supporters did, during the primary season when they realized, seemingly by surprise, they suddenly realized how the system worked and how a candidate like Clinton had a built-in advantage in the primaries. They came very close, frankly, for a party that really represents somewhat of a fringe of the Democratic Party, to actually winning the Democratic nomination. But they did, it became clear that they weren't going to win it, they started challenging some of the rules that were in place for decades and saying that they were illegitimate. And so this claim was ringing throughout this election on both sides. So hopefully what that the useful outcome of that would be some conversation within the two parties to reform and simplify the electoral system, the primary system. That would be wonderful. I think everybody would welcome that. The problem there is the people that could do that are the people in Congress who have a vested interest in the system as it is, because it delivers them a job every 2 years for the House or every 6 years for the senators. So it's a tall order to see that kind of electoral reform. The other thing I would say, though, is that the extent to which populism has taken root in the United States can't be overstated. And this is a globally important issue. We've seen, obviously, in Europe, there's an upsurge in populism on both the left and right, playing havoc with the European Union. We saw Brexit as one of the outcomes of that, but there are also other implications within the EU of the upsurge in anti-immigrant sentiment, in xenophobia, and in populism generally with regard to economic policy. In the United States, that's coming from both sides as well. You know, Donald Trump's faction within the Republican Party, plus the Tea Party, which is a faction that's not quite analogous to his. Both of them are not free trade parties. They do not agree with usual Republican doctrine on things like pro-business, pro-Wall Street policies. They are very much grassroots populists. On the left, Bernie Sanders' party is against free trade. Bernie Sanders' party sounds, when you really listen to it, quasi-isolationist on foreign policy. So this is a really big shift in both American political parties, and it's going to haunt whoever is president in the next generation.
Okay, Mike, we better leave it there. You can always go to our website, www.controlrisk.com, for more analysis and information about the U.S. election and indeed the whole sweep of geopolitical risks that we cover at Control Risks. You can also find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Mike, thanks very much. I'm sure we'll be hearing from you again soon.
Thank you, Casper.
Bye for now.